Welcome to the Call the Vet Show, the podcast that helps pet parents understand and optimize the health of their furry family so they can live the full and happy life you want for them. And here's your host, veterinarian Dr. Alex Avery.
Hello, kia ora. Welcome back to another episode of the Call the Vet Show. I'm really excited for this one because today I'm bringing you a snippet of a fantastic conversation I had with Dr. Jeff Werber as part of the Dog Allergy Summit, an event where I brought together 18 global allergy experts and we discussed everything dog allergies, from the causes of allergies, how to diagnose them, through to all of the different treatment options that are available to you. Really, we covered everything that you need to know about the integrative approach to dog allergy treatment, giving you the steps to eliminate itch for good. And addressing allergies, getting to the bottom of them, and coming up with a successful treatment plan really involves making an accurate diagnosis in the first place. And there are a number of really common pitfalls and mistakes and myths out there when it comes to diagnosing allergies, which is why I wanted to bring you this snippet today, all about how we can accurately diagnose allergies in dogs, or accurately diagnose why they're itching, because there are a number of other reasons why dogs itch, of course, so that we can get to the bottom of this really common problem that ultimately affects one in five dogs at some point in their life. And although the Allergy Summit has been and gone, I'm now really proud to be able to bring it for you on demand so that you can learn at your own pace and you can take advantage of the massive amount of expertise, the hugely practical tips that the allergy experts I chatted to shared with you. So if that's something you're interested in, if your dog suffers from allergies, if you've struggled to get under control, if you're tired of watching your furry friend suffer from constant itching and scratching, if they're awake all night and they're disturbing your sleep as well, or you're worried about the side effects of some of the drugs that we commonly use, then the Dog Allergy Summit is definitely for you. And you can check that out over at ourpetshealth.com/allergy summit. And I'll leave links in the description to this podcast episode for that as well. So check that out at ourpetshealth.com/allergy summit. And I'd now love to introduce you to Dr. Jeff Werber, but I really couldn't think of a better person to be discussing this topic with you. He is an Emmy award-winning veterinarian because of his ability to communicate really quite complicated pieces of information with everybody, no matter what your knowledge base. And he's also just a fantastic person to have a conversation with. So without further ado, here's the wonderful Dr. Jeff Werber.
Here's this episode's expert interview.
Dr. Jeff Werber, it's fantastic to be talking to you today, and you've got so many expertise to be bringing to the discussion that we're going to be having. Before we dive into some of the diagnosis and treatment for our allergic dogs, I'd love to know just what allergy types there are and maybe how common each of those types are, because I think there might be differences that people aren't aware of with that.
Well, you know, certainly there are, you know, allergic to skin disease in general is one of the more common things we're going to see a dog for. It's itching and scratching. Another very common one is vomiting and diarrhea. Okay. And that covers a lot of them right there. And, you know, maybe some sort of injury, limping, you know, stuff like that. But, you know, a dog typically going to come in, it's going to have one of those. So, you know, as we say very scientifically, ADR just ain't doing right. So, so as far as allergy, you know, we have probably the most common are going to be environmental atopies called atopic dermatitis, which is sort of pollens, grasses, weeds, trees, kind of like our hay fever. Then we have actually the types of environmental allergens that might be around a house. That could be kapok, wool, feathers, house dust mites, human epithelia. That's right. They can be allergic to us. And then any kind of, you know, irritant. And then the one that is, you know, interestingly gets a lot of attention, though it's really not as common as people think, is food allergy. And I mean, they all have, you know, one good thing about dogs when it comes to these is you can often tell, okay, by the nature of the allergy and the distribution of allergic disease and signs, what the allergen might be. Okay. And of course, seasonal allergy, you have to think of fleas. So And here we are in LA. I mean, I'm in LA where it's springtime and it's beautiful out. And yes, we are seeing fleas and ticks already. So where I am. So, you know, that is, you know, a huge one to contend with. Cats, on the other hand, are a little bit different because cats, regardless of what the allergen is, they can manifest in so many different ways. So you don't have that kind of luck head start you would in trying to diagnose dog allergies. So, you know, again, if you really were to simplify it, and I mean really simplify it, the rump, above the tail, lower back, that's fleas. Now, mind you, the dogs didn't read the book, so they don't always know that this is the way it's supposed to be. In the belly, ventrum, groin, inguinal area, you think atopic dermatitis. You think of pollens, grasses, weeds, trees. Of course, if they're lying down on something and there's an irritant, something from around the house, then you'd see a ventral. Now, true food allergy, if it is really true food allergy, you got to think of chewing the feet and ears. But of course, ears are overlapped because ears can manifest any allergy, especially atopic dermatitis as well. We often see it in the ears as well. So it gives you a clue, but it's not a hard, fast rule. So
yeah, I love that. Yeah, I love that. So food, I guess, because there's a lot of focus on food, and you're right that it's often the first thing that's blamed. And that's not to say that food doesn't always play a role in treating and settling our atopic dogs, but true food allergies are perhaps not as common as people might expect.
Correct. They say maybe 15%, more likely 10% of all allergies are going to be food related. So, you know, and you know, the bad news is about food is that it's really hard to diagnose. The allergy testing, we can get that a little later when we talk about diagnosing. It doesn't work for food. So then the only way to do it is food elimination. And boy, it is one of the most challenging things to do right of all the things we have to do when it comes to allergies is that really good food trial. And it's tough.
Yeah, absolutely. It's easy to do, but not easy to do right. And you can undo all of your hard work.
One little mistake, right?
Yeah. When it comes to, I guess, that presentation as well. So we've got our category of dog that, you know, they do have that very distinct pattern that right. clues you into that. But equally, I mean, I see fleas. I'm in New Zealand and we have a pretty cold winter, but I'm still seeing fleas. I would hazard a guess at every week, at least once, even throughout winter. So like you said, they don't always read that textbook, do they? And it can be quite challenging then to separate allergies from other skin conditions.
Right. And not to mention that, when you think of allergies, one of the most common secondary sequelae of allergic dermatitis is bacterial pyoderma. And it's usually when we see bacterial pyoderma, it's often secondary to something. And that most often that something is allergy, which also complicates our treatment because you could be doing the best allergy treatment possible. But if you don't take care of that secondary infection, they're still scratching. They're going to town on themselves. And you're going to get so frustrated. You're going to throw your hands up like, oh, my God, what did I do all that for? It's because you have to really take note that you need to treat the entire dog. And that includes secondary infection as well, if that is one of the complicators.
Yeah. So if you've got a dog that's coming to see you in the clinic, then Dr. Jeff, and you're suspicious that they're allergic, what kind of steps are you taking if we're thinking now about diagnosing and getting to the bottom of that problem as quickly as we can?
So, you know, first of all, again, the location of the lesions will tell me a lot. For certainly fleas, when I go against the grain, the hair by the rump of the tail, and I see either fleas or flea dirt, you know, or just that allergy, just that area, being showing signs of allergic dermatitis, it's almost to me, it's like that big sign, you know, on the moon that says, you know, we were here, fleas were here. We just know, I just got to find them. And people say, no, they're not fleas. And I'm looking painstakingly, looking. And sure enough, I find them. I say, I told you.
It's great isn't it? When you bring that, you get that flea comb. I always say, actually, the flea comb is one of the most useful pieces of equipment that I have in my consult room. It's pretty basic, but it does the job.
Right. So that's one thing. Now, if it's on the belly, you know, obviously, is it seasonal or not? And I often say this, if the allergy goes away during the non-seasonal months, then clearly it's a seasonal allergy. If it's there the whole time and I still suspect allergy, now I'm looking for something around the house. I'm looking for some household allergen that's there. You don't take the carpets out during the winter, right? You don't change the bed, the blankets or the wool or the feather pillows during the winter. So they're there all the time. So if the allergy is there all the time, now I'm thinking something more home environmental. Because again, during the winter here, we don't have a big flea problem. I mean, yes, you can get occasionally will, but it's not a big flea problem. And of course the pollens change. Just the history to me is one of the best techniques, forms of coming to an accurate diagnosis. Now, how about testing? So if I, based on my history and the clinical presentation, I am now suspicious of some sort of allergen out in the environment, whether it's home allergen or outside allergen, like the pollens and the grasses, weeds, trees, et cetera, then I might recommend allergy testing. And allergy testing used to be much more of a challenge for us general practitioners than it is now, because you had to do the scratch testing, still probably the gold standard, but you'd have to keep the allergens, have a shelf life. We don't test that many, whereas the allergists do, the dermatologists. So you end up throwing them out and you got to really get good at reading them. And the best way to get good at reading them is do a bunch of them. But if you don't do a bunch of them, you'll never get good at reading them. And then it's a wasted test. So now with the blood testing, all right, where they're doing serum testing, we're told that it's not quite as specific or sensitive, but it's not bad. And it's a lot easier to do. You do not have to have drug withdrawal before you test them like you would with the skin testing. So it's much more convenient. And the clients like it because you draw the blood, you send it off, and you get a really cool report, with all the scores. And then you can make up the allergen, the antigen testing, the antigen treatment based on the results of that test. But here's one thing I always tell my clients. I let them know what the point of this test is. The point is that we are trying to identify the allergens so we can desensitize or hyposensitize more accurately. And if you are not willing to commit to those daily under the sublingual drops, those are drops under the tongue, or the injections which start fairly frequently and then spread out over time, then don't do it. Because, you might be able to identify something around the house. Oh my God, you got to get rid of all the feathers. You got to get rid of all the house dust, all the house dust mites, tobacco, stop smoking, maybe, and then it's worth it. But if you're not going to commit to the desensitization, hyposensitization, it costs a lot of money as the test if you're not going to do anything about it. So I have that discussion with my clients. If they are ready to go for it, we're doing it. Doc, we're doing it because we got to help Bowser. Then I'll recommend that. Some dogs respond so well, especially to some of the newer treatments we have that are much safer and much more specific, that if I could give, maybe 2 months of treatment during July and August, and that takes care of them for the whole year, then we're good. Why go through the craziness of everything else? So this is where the educating the pet parent and really having a discussion with them plays a major role in what decision they will make and what options I will offer.
Yeah, it's important. I think that's a fantastic mantra and one that I live by with any test that I do is right. If it's not going to change right. What we're going to do, then why bother? Because I think especially with allergy testing and with the blood tests and all the intradermal tests, if we're going down that route with a dermatologist, it lets us know what the biggest allergy things in the environment are, and there's normally a number of them. It's not normally just one, is it? But also it's not, you will have dogs that are actually do not have allergic skin disease who come up positive, so it's important that we've been through a lot of these other things that you've spoken about before we just jump to itchy dog, draw blood,
right? And exactly, totally true. And that's how I feel. I it's usually not my very first line of defense. Sometimes it's almost like getting the client to try some other things. Especially if there's no success, and we finally say, look, do you want to subject your poor dog? I mean, it's actually an easier sell, if you will, now. It was easier then when the alternatives were Atopica, we talked about a little bit, or prednisone, which have side effects. They're not the best drugs to keep a dog on long term. So if you can teach them to do what your allergy doctor would do for you and that's hyposensitized, then it makes a huge difference. So that's kind of how I feel. Well, anything else we want to talk about as far as identifying, making the diagnosis before we talk about treating?
Well, I guess because when we think of some of those complications or some of the other things, I guess just mentioning what other tests we've got. So we've got like our tape prep, skin scrapes, looking
okay,
for
so great. For so let's talk maybe. About the complications. So the complicators, as I said, would be skin-related problems secondary to the allergy. And for them to identify certain bacteria, you can, you know, if there are lesions, we can do impression smears. We can see, are there certain bacteria that we can identify? That also helps us choose the appropriate antibiotics. Based on, are we seeing gram-negative rods? Well, most cephalosporins are good, except nowadays, because of mistakes that we've all made over the years, I'm seeing gram-negative rods that are resistant to everything, except maybe amikacin. So it's really tough. You know, we've created our own monster, really, when it comes to the inappropriate use of antibiotics over the years. So, of course, that's skin scrapings. You know, we want to rule out mange. You know, a lot of dogs, for example, immunosuppressed dogs who might have demodectic mange. You know, back in when I graduated school, that's a long time ago. Let's just leave it at that. We used to say about 50-60% of dogs had the demodectic mange mite in their skin. Now it's 100%. And what I tell people to really freak them out, that many people have that mite living in our eyebrows. Peacefully coexist, you don't even know it's there. And in most cases, the same thing with demodectic mange mite. But in cases of inflammation, immunosuppression, stress, anxiety, having a dog going through heat, a mama dog having you know, puppies, right? Then we can see demodectic mange flaring up. So we want to take that. If there's intense itching, now we have to think of scabies. And again, especially we see it more in young dogs. And that one, I always tell people, be careful, because that one can live on you. Now, it pretty much can't reproduce on you. It might be a couple of weeks of irritation and annoyance, but you know, it'll ultimately resolve. But I've gotten it once or twice. Ringworm, fungal infection, also a complicator. And, linked often to the immune system, dogs that go inside playing in mud, depending on where you live, you can have these fungal in certain parts of the United States. We see a lot of fungal disease. So here are some of the other, you know, conditions that just complicate one would think, oh, allergies, no problem. But here's a pill. Let's treat them. Not so fast. It's not that easy.
It would be nice if it was, though, wasn't it?
Absolutely.
Helping your pet live the happy, healthy life they deserve.
I hope you enjoyed that part of my conversation with Dr. Jeff. We then went on to talk all about some of the common drugs that we use, how they work, what the side effects are, and what you really need to know if your dog is on these medications or that is something that you're thinking for them. Because ultimately, with allergies, we can all get really frustrated and worried about them. And whether you're tired of watching your furry friend from being constantly itchy and recognizing just how miserable that's making them, whether you're struggling to afford their care, which is definitely something that is a problem at our current point in time, or you're just worried about the potential for drug side effects, I'd love for you to check out the Dog Allergy Summit, where we talk about everything to do with the integrative approach to dog allergy treatment, giving you the steps, giving you the knowledge and the action that you need to take to eliminate itch in your dog for good, and ultimately beat their allergies and give them back their quality of life. So again, you can find out more about the Dog Allergy Summit over at ourpetshealth.com/allergysummit. But until the next episode of the Call the Vet Show, I'm veterinarian Dr. Alex, because they're family.
That's it for this episode of the Call the Vet Show. Be sure to visit callthevet.org to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover our fantastic bonus content. We'll see you next time.